I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is Joshua Hatton, the co-founder of the Jewish Whiskey Company. We'll also have a visit from our Two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our Maybe Not on Israel, Oshrat Barel. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. As we enjoy the end of rodeo weekend here in Tucson, Arizona, where I live, we're also approaching a major spring festival on the Jewish calendar. Purim is coming up quickly. In fact, at my own Temple Emmanuel, we'll be celebrating next Sunday morning, a week from now, with a full musical version of the Esther story told through the questionable lens of the great Broadway show Guys and Dolls. This will be a fabulous takeoff of the show, complete with costumes and sets, and it's free and everybody's welcome. And it's followed by a full carnival with rides, games, and great food. So come next Sunday morning, but also come to the Purim Megillah reading this Thursday evening. Purim is the great Jewish festival of celebration, reversals, silliness, and joy. It's arguably also the most enjoyable of all Jewish holidays, the one that features the reading, well, the chanting of the Megillat Esther, the Scroll of Esther from the Bible. Lots of cheering and booing, carnivals, plays, food, drink, fun, and frolic. There is no more purely pleasant holiday than Purim, coming as it does in the springtime, promising silliness, costumes, and lots of opportunities to celebrate. In that spirit, we are supposed to break out this time of year and really embrace the joy of being Jewish. While much of the year we tend to focus a little too much on other Jewish qualities like responsibility and, well, guilt. At the time of Purim and in its general vicinity, we're commanded, literally commanded, to have a good time. We smile a little more, tell jokes, plan parties, think up ridiculous Purim costumes to wear, and just generally enjoy life. Purim is a great deal like the other fun spring festivals going around today. Mardi Gras, Carnival, Spring Fling, Rodeo, and the like. Only Purim has been around a good deal longer, going back as it does about 2,500 years to the ancient Persian Empire, a plot to kill the Jews, and are ultimately being saved and our enemies routed. Purim is in that great run of Jewish holidays from Hanukkah in December to Passover in April that can be described in just 9 words. They tried to kill us. We survived. Let's eat. In Purim's case, it was the evil Haman, counselor to the king of Persia, who had it in for the Jews. And it was 2 Jews, a man and his niece, Mordechai and Esther, who saved our people. The food that we eat and love is the fabulous Hamantaschen, pastry of perfection. Now, about that drinking thing in Purim. While we Jews are not generally known for our drinking alcohol in quantity, as Jackie Mason says, mostly we're looking for another piece of cake, not a martini. The holiday of the Megillah actually requires us legally to drink Ad Lo Yada until we can't tell the difference between Haman the villain and Mordechai the hero. In that spirit, or spirits, there are some classic Purim songs about drinking, including this one from the Sephardi group, The Voice of the Turtle, and their Purim CD, The Sword of the Dove. It's called Quando Haman Semboracho, When the Wicked Haman Was Drunk.
Cuando Haman se emborrachó y salió afuera, a los niños preguntó qué peracha era. Dijeron, vaya era la Abraham. Tenemos padre Rahman, que el mozapía de Yahamal lo mate. Viva yo, viva el rey, viva todo Israel. Viva la reina Esther, que tanto placer nos dio. Thank you.
wild, fun song, Cuando Haman se emborrachó, when Haman was drunk for Purim. I have to admit, I flat out love Purim. We rabbis sometimes talk about the fact that Purim is a kind of anti-Yom Kippur, coming exactly half a year later, 6 months nearly to the day, reversing all the customs of the abstemious Atonement Day in raucous celebration. On Yom Kippur, we dress in white. On Purim, in bright costume. On Yom Kippur, we fast, but on Purim, we feast. On Yom Kippur, we abstain from drinking even water. On Purim, we drink even alcohol to excess. And so on. Or as one rabbi put it, on Purim, we dress up and pretend to be Gentiles. On Yom Kippur, we dress up and pretend to be Jews. But in truth, for me, Purim is just proof that even God needs a good party now and then. So, enjoy Purim, both for the Megillah reading Thursday night and Friday, and next Sunday morning for the extravaganza show and carnival at Temple Emmanuel. Oh, and don't forget to eat the best food in the whole world, the delicious pastry called Hamantaschen, a three-corner cookie shaped supposedly like the hat that wicked Haman wore, or perhaps like his ears. My wife Wendy makes the world's best Hamantaschen, and this year's include rhubarb Hamantaschen. They are spectacular. The tartness offsets the sweet cookie dough perfectly. She also makes peanut butter and chocolate Hamantaschen, and cheesecake ones with chocolate chips, and my all-time favorite, the traditional poppy seed ones, but hers are the best. But whatever you prefer, apricot, raspberry, cherry, prune, or something novel, they are the best tasting treat of all. Chag Purim Sameach, have a happy holiday of Purim. You know, appropriate to the Jewish festival in which we are enjoined to sample whiskey or wine ad lo yada until we don't know the difference between the villain Haman and the hero Mordechai, and cheer Haman and boo Mordechai, well, to help, we have a whiskey expert with us this morning on Too Jewish. But very much in contradistinction to the idea that we aren't supposed to know, our guest, Joshua Hatton, knows more about fine whiskey than anybody else on the planet, more or less. He is the originator of the Jewish Whiskey Company, and he'll explain what makes whiskey kosher or not, and what makes it outstanding when we come back soon on Too Jewish.
My name is John Ben Asher, and I'm the head of school at the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Tucson Hebrew Academy is a pluralistic kindergarten through 8th grade Jewish day school. We foster educational excellence through an interdisciplinary, integrated general studies and Judaic curriculum. We teach our students to apply Jewish values and learning to everyday life, enabling them to make their community and the world a better place. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supportive learning environment. From the early years through comprehensive high school prep, children thrive in THA's uniquely enriching educational community and culture. Our 41-year tradition of excellence continues to produce highly skilled, critical, and creative thinking students with a strong moral compass and deep understanding of Jewish identity, traditions, and values, well prepared for the challenges to come. Tucson Hebrew Academy, thaaz.org, 529-3888.
If you like fun and games, you'll love this. And this. And even this. Casino del Sol Resort offers more fun under the sun with the newest slots, the best entertainment, and world-class golf. If you want fun, hit the at Casino del Sol Resort in Tucson. Take I-10 East to I-19 exit Valencia West or visit CasinoDelSolResort.com.
Well, they're out there having fun in that warm Arizona sun.
Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish our guest this morning. Joshua Hatton is the co-creator of the Jewish Whiskey Company, which produces, imports, and popularizes some extraordinary single malt scotches. Welcome, and tell us, since when did scotch become a Jewish drink?
Well, firstly, thank you so much for having me on your show. I'm delighted to be on it. You know, there have been a lot of people who've asked me that question. When did scotch become such a Jewish drink? It's really tough to put a date on it. But one of the things that I found interesting about whiskey in general is when you think about what men could bring to the Kiddush Club years and years ago when the only kosher wine available may have been Manischewitz.
Right.
You want something that may not present any issues, and bourbon and Scotch whiskey seem to be the ideal choice for Kiddush clubs many, many years back, and I think the tradition just carried on.
You know, I remember when I was young, working as a cantor, and there'd be an early morning minyan at the synagogue I was employed at, and I'd come in and read Torah, lead services, and right afterwards there would be pickled herring and rotgut bourbon. And it was a very interesting way to start the day at, you know, 6:45 in the morning or something when you finish services. Things have upgraded a little bit since then, haven't they?
Well, yeah. I don't think rotgut bourbon makes for a very good breakfast whiskey.
Not even on Purim, really. I can vouch for that.
Things have definitely changed. Within the industry itself, the quality of whiskey over the years has really improved. The producers are very mindful of the ingredients that they use to create their various whiskeys. They're mindful of the quality wood casks or barrels that they use. And Jewish or not, consumers of whiskey have become a little more finicky, and they demand good quality.
So what makes Scotch kosher? You know, with wine, there's some controversy and there's a whole discussion about it, but it's pretty simple with whiskey, isn't it?
With whiskey, it can be simple and it can be confusing. You know, the old saying is get two Jews in a room and you have three opinions. As far as bourbon or American whiskey goes, there really is no concern. It's just bourbon is made from generally a corn mash, corn and wheat and barley. They take that mash, they turn it into a beer, they distill that beer, and then they put it into new charred American oak. There really is nothing to be concerned about there. There tends to be a bit of a concern when we get into the Scotch whiskeys, and that's when the Scotch whiskey industry will use sherry casks to mature the whiskey. And that's when the questions come into play. And, you know, we can, if you want to talk about that further, we can definitely peel away the onion on that one as to why there may be concerns with that.
We will certainly explore that when we come back on this pre-Purim edition of Two Jewish with Josh Hatton of the Jewish Whiskey Company. Now I want to express my thanks. As president of the Kohan Memorial Foundation, I'm glad and grateful that the modest cash awards we started with some 10 years ago have grown into a rather substantial amount with the help of donors like many of you. The Kohan Foundation, named for my grandparents, Rabbi Samuel S. Kohan and A. Irma Kohan of blessed memory, makes these awards for important service to Klal Yisrael, the whole Jewish people. That service can be in one of four areas: unity, education and information, creative arts, or rescue. Our past award winners include some truly amazing people, and we are grateful for the chance to reward them and their fine work. Do you know of someone who could qualify for a Kohan Award in 2015? Or will you consider participating in this work yourself? Please go to our website, www.kohanaward.com, KohanAward.com, where you can find all the information on nominating and on participating in this great work. And we'll be glad to hear from you. Our goal is to help people who work for the whole Jewish people. We welcome David and Pam of Freedom Smoke, new sponsors here on Two Jewish. We started talking last week about Freedom Smoke, the smokeless product, no tobacco, to get people off of cigarettes. What are the health advantages to using your product as opposed to smoking?
Thank you, Rabbi Kohan. We have a lot of physicians here in town, from neurologists to ophthalmologists, cardiologists, pulmonologists, sending patients to us because of damaging effects from emphysema, everything of the like that comes from smoking cancerous cigarettes.
And Freedom Smoke International provides all kinds of flavors, pleasurable experience, but not the same health risk.
That's right. You have the same experience as smoking. You have the hand-to-mouth, the mantra of the in-and-out, as well as vapor as compared to cigarette smoke. So there's no secondhand smoke either.
how can people find your product?
They can find us through freedomsmokeusa.com. Our toll-free number, which is here in Tucson, is 800-705-7013.
And then go into a store.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We have three stores. We're opening a fourth in the next couple of months here in town.
We will talk more next week. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows by streaming them from our website, twojewishradio.com, or download us at the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. You know, Purim, which celebrates the events of the Book of Esther in the Bible, is quite likely the most purely fun Jewish festival of all. It's coming up this week, Thursday night and Friday, and the Purim shows and carnivals a week from today, next Sunday. Anyway, to continue our pre-Purim preview of tunes for the holiday of the Hamantash, here's Michael Isaacson's Esther the Queen.
Let us remember with true emotion, let us pay homage to Esther the Queen, and rekindle the ember of true devotion. Esther, we give you our blessed esteem. Let us honor the day that we set for Purim, honor the story and all it can mean, for the valorous way that she saved our people. Honor the glory of Esther the Queen. We know Haman, foe of Israel, plotted a slaughter. Each son and daughter soon would fall. But Esther sought the king, Ahasuerus. She stood before him, proud and tall. Saved us all. Nations may flourish on high ambition, only to weaken and pass from the scene. But the Hebrews will nourish their strong tradition, always protecting, always reflecting, always perfecting. Lest we forget that we yet are indebted to Esther. Lest we forget that we yet are indebted to Esther. Lest we forget that we yet are indebted to Esther the Queen. Esther the Queen!
That was Esther the Queen for the holiday of Purim coming this week. Purim has often been described as the holiday when we Jews dress up in costumes to look different than we normally do. Interestingly, the parallel, as I mentioned earlier in this show, is Yom Kippur, in which we dress up and try to be as truly ourselves as possible, but not on Purim. The two holidays are linked together in contrast, really. Yom HaKippurim, the proper name for Yom Kippur, sounds rather like Yom Purim. They're exactly 6 months apart, and thematically, while Yom Kippur is about seriousness and atonement, Purim is about silliness and raucous revelry. But in another sense, Purim and Yom Kippur are linked by the ways they highlight our human range. We need both times of serious contemplation and repentance, times of unbridled joy, humor, and feasting to counteract those. When we can achieve a balance between the two extremes, we truly reach our human potential. Judaism understands that, has always understood that, and our calendar gives us the opportunity to express the full complement of human emotions and experiences. Purim, in that sense, is just as important as Yom Kippur. Anyway, enjoy Purim. Celebrate the joy of Judaism. We say that a lot here on Too Jewish. And celebrate as well its message, meaning, and morality. We welcome our Mivinah in Israel, Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
So, Chag Sameach.
Chag Sameach.
Purim is this week, the most fun holiday of all. And I think about Purim as
especially
in Israel. Actually, you know, as nice as it is in America, in Israel, Purim is crazy. Everybody participates. Grown-ups, adults dress up in costume and sprays.
And half drunk.
Yes, maybe not so half. I've been in snowball fights in Israel on Purim with people 20 years older than I was. Lots of crazy stuff happens. Really fun. It seems appropriate to talk about the Israeli elections at the time of Purim because there's some things about them that don't make any sense to Americans. They just seem completely crazy. You know, there's a reason we call them political parties. It's not because they're fun. It's because they seem to be out of control sometimes. How many parties are running for the Knesset? Now, how many different parties can have seats in the Israeli parliament?
I can't remember the exact number because it's changed from day to day.
Right.
But there is much more than, I would say, 15.
15 different
yeah.
parties.
Yeah. And, you know, it's very interesting, the trend, because, like, I would say 30, 40 years ago, it would be mainly the Likud party and the Labor party. And there is a very simple explanation. 40 years ago, most of the people were same poor.
Yeah.
Like
there Israel
wasn't,
was a poor country.
Wasn't so much differences between the people. And the majority or the major interest was the bitachon, was the
security.
So whomever, you know, was who believed that Israel need to be like Israel HaShlema,
right,
it was more
greater,
about the
boundaries of
the
Israel.
Boundaries of Israel.
Yeah, in other words, if you believed in greater Israel, you were a Likudnik.
Yeah.
If you believed in compromise.
And if you believe in compromising, so you will be, it was very simple. And then during the year, when the gaps.
The economic.
Economic gaps
began to form.
And the privatization and many, many, and the kibbutzim and the changes. It was so many changes that created
social changes, really.
Social changes that create the needs of being more specific about I can be like I can believe in Israel HaShlema, but also be very socialist. I can believe in that. So it create the needs to have all kind of very, very unique, specific parties.
Almost boutique parties.
Boutique, I like it. Boutique parties. Yeah, so you have Kahlon, Moshe Kahlon, who used to be with the Likud.
Right.
Very, very socialist. Did a huge, like a tremendous change in the cellular world in Israel. And he just established his own party. That fight, of course, Yair Lapid party, because they are talking about the same Mamad HaBinayim, but also fight the Likud because he has the same beliefs like the Likud. So there are cannibalization.
So cannibalization of different parties. So he takes votes from Likud on security matters because he's just
exactly.
strong on the greater Israel and pushing the Arabs out. But he takes votes from Lapid's kind of middle class because he's very socialist in his
and
ideology.
And he bites the Labor as
labor
well
party
because
too.
Labor... Like
labor has similar social views, but different
yes.
political views
and
on
those
security.
Who doesn't believe in the leadership, the new leadership of the labor. So it become like I think all the parties right now, beside the extreme left and right, saying the same about all
issues. Yeah.
So it become really, you know,
popularity contest. But
that's why it's very hard to predict because people can change their mind because the differences are very tiny. Again. You leave the extreme
groups on either side.
So
right.
That's why it's very, very hard. Like right now, let's say Lapid has 9 seats. It can easily change and become like 19 if Moshe Kahlon will do a major
mistake of some kind,
or
right.
if, you know, Bougie would say something that
if
will...
Herzog say something, you know,
yeah,
foolish.
Yeah, so it's really very, very fragile.
Wow.
Very fragile.
Fascinating. Very different system. We will talk next week, Oshra.
Tada.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174. Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Geropsych specializes in providing short-term, inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help?
With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Tom, Purim is coming up this week, which we think of as ancient Persia, but that's today's Iran, which has had a Jewish community that goes back 2,500 years, maybe 2,600 years. And we think that it's all gone. They all left. But in fact, there are still some Iranian Jews in Iran, even today.
Correct. The more attentive members of your listening audience will remember my story about once spending a Shabbat evening in Shiraz at the home of a rabbi who was like a 35th generation rabbi. His family had been in Shiraz since the first exile.
Yeah, right? Like since Babylonian exile in 586 BCE.
Right. So his family had been there for almost 2,600 years. Mm. And the guy spoke French, Persian, and Hebrew. So there were two languages we could communicate in. And, you know, talk about deeply rooted communities. Now, I don't know that there's any community left in Shiraz or in any of the secondary cities in Iran. There are some Jews left in Tehran. Not a lot. There used to be a huge community.
Huge.
Many of them moved to LA, as you know. Many moved to Israel. Many moved to other places. Basically, those who moved were ones who either had relatives who could take them in or who managed to sell their assets at some reasonable price and not just give everything away and leave impoverished.
With nothing, right.
Right. So those who are still in Iran are those who basically had no personal ties outside the country or who simply couldn't sell their property or whatever, for whatever reasons. And I think they may feel trapped. There still is a communal life. There's still occasionally a bar mitzvah or a wedding, but it's all very low profile, very discreet, and very much without appearing to be pro-Israel or pro-Zionist in any way.
Well, I think some of them have had to actually, either by compulsion or fear, protest against Israel in some of the public displays that Iran tends to put on from time to time. So it's living in fear and living as low profile, as you put it, as humanly possible, but also not being executed, hopefully not being imprisoned. You know, we don't hear about horrible persecutions, which is fascinating because Iran is so anti-Israel and so anti-American as well.
Right, but not specifically anti-Jewish. And I think one of their constant goals, something you always hear from Iranis, is we're the oldest civilization in the world. We're the most civilized country. We've been around for 7,000 years. All the rest of you are uncivilized barbarians. Why would we hate Jews or anyone else for that matter? You know, they hate what they regard as present injustice, but not groups of people, if that makes sense.
It does. It's a fascinating approach, and it's probably keeping the remaining Jews in Persia alive. Thanks, Tom. Chag Sameach. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
Hi, I'm Ben. Attention Arizona taxpayers, you can help provide a Jewish education to families at no cost to you by redirecting your Arizona state tax dollars to JETCO, the Jewish Education Tax Credit Organization. You can help make Jewish education affordable.
Here's how it works. Arizona lets taxpayers receive a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for payments made to JETCO. This lets JETCO give scholarships to kids who attend private schools like Congregation Anshe Israel's Kindergarten and Tucson Hebrew Academy, serving students from K through 8. Tax credits are different from a tax deduction or donation. When you give to JETCO, you get 100% tax credit. That means your Arizona state income taxes are reduced by the exact amount you've given. Supporters of JETCO can give up to $1,053 for a single filer or $2,106 for a married couple filing jointly and get that whole amount back from state income tax.
Give JETCO a call at 647-8442. That's 647-8442. Or you can go to JETCO.org.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor, Bubby and Zadie New, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. A Jewish town has a shortage of men for wedding purposes, so they have to import them from other towns.
One day, a groom-to-be arrives on a train, and two mothers-in-law-to-be are waiting for him, each claiming ownership of him. A wise rabbi is called in to solve the problem. After a few minutes of thought, he says, "If this is the situation, and you both want this groom, we'll cut him in half and give each one of you half of him." The first woman replies, "If that's the case, give him to the other woman." And the rabbi says, "Do that. The one who's willing to cut him in half, that is the real mother-in-law." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Two Jewish Just for You. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week we read the portion of Ki Tisa, the story of the golden calf. This is one of the most dramatic and, for the rabbis of the Talmud, distressing portions in the whole Torah. The problem is acute. According to the text of the Torah, our people witnessed the 10 plagues, are personally saved at the shore of the Sea of Reeds by God, get the direct revelation at Sinai, in short, experience God more directly than any other group in history ever has, and then almost immediately turn around and reject God and worship a cow made out of their own jewelry. No wonder the rabbis of the Talmud and Midrash called this week's events the Maaseh HaEgel, the awful story of the calf. How can a people, given such a clear set of signs and wonders, and even direct instruction and command, follow God for only 40 days before pursuing a weak and bovine substitute? The answer, to paraphrase Shakespeare, is not in our God, but in ourselves. We enjoy spectacle, are impressed by it, even awed by it. But as soon as it's gone, its effects linger a very short time indeed. What makes us tick as human beings, what keeps us in line, is the very dailiness of regular observances, of rules and schedules, of the kinds of laws and rituals that are very much a part of practical Judaism, from then until now. We need both ritual and structure. And until these are provided in a coherent way, we tend to flounder, even disastrously so, as our people did way back at the time of the golden calf. The message is, simply, that we need more than grand ideas or sweeping spirituality. We need more than dramatic thunder and lightning and shining religious drama. We need religion and a Jewish grounding in practice and experience, or we won't be able to remain both ethical and coherent. Without that focus, we begin to worship golden calves of every kind, from our work to our pastimes to our possessions to our unfortunate obsessions with power and control. The antidote to this tendency to turn to substitutes for goodness is to renew our commitment to holy actions, even small ones. This week, try personally to incorporate a Jewish practice you have not previously observed. Perhaps a bit of Torah study or prayer, of ritual or tzedakah that you haven't made a regular part of your life previously. Doing so will help you connect to the true God, and so avoid the danger of worshiping your own golden calves. Our Jewish poetry slam this morning is for the coming holiday of Purim, when we traditionally all wear masks. It's called Purim Greetings by Simon Jacobson. May you be turned inside out, upside down, and outside in. May your masks be masked and your inside unmasked. May your face shine from within as you meet yourself face to face. May your masquerade no longer be needed as the shrouds fade away. May your child smile and dance as the facade is lifted. May you just be. That was the poem Purim Greetings by Simon Jacobson for Purim this coming Thursday and Friday, and the Purim Shows and Carnivals the following Sunday. When we return in a moment here on Too Jewish, our guest, Joshua Hatton, will explain why fine single malt Scotch whiskey can be a very Jewish thing and an appropriate one in this season of Purim. Find out how the Jewish Whiskey Company got started and what you can learn about this unique beverage when we come back in a few moments here on Too Jewish.
If you like fun and games, you'll love this. And this any than this. Casino del Sol Resort offers more fun under the sun with the newest slots, the best entertainment, and world-class golf. If you want fun, hit the... at Casino del Sol Resort in Tucson. Take I-10 East to I-19 exit Valencia West or visit CasinoDelSolResort.com.
Well, they're out there having fun in that warm Arizona sun.
Enterprise of the Pasquagaki Tribe.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursday is my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life, 322-7035. We continue with our Two Jewish Update on news of Jews around the world with commentary from our guest, Rabbi Sandy Seltzer.
Various sources are reporting that a number of Arab nations, including Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and the United Arab Emirates, are joining Israel in expressing their concerns to Washington over the pending nuclear agreement now being negotiated by American Secretary of State John Kerry and Iranian officials. In their view, the agreement will not only allow Iran to proceed with its nuclear ambitions, but will be followed by a nuclear arms race in the Middle East. As one unnamed Arab diplomat put it, "At this stage, we prefer a collapse of the talks to a bad deal." Israel has called upon the United Nations to condemn a just-announced cartoon contest sponsored by Iran, which would award a first prize of $12,000 to the best cartoon denying the reality of the Holocaust. In a display of what could best be described as twisted and perverse logic, the contest, say its Iranian sponsors, is a reaction to the insulting cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad by the French satirical magazine Charlie Hebdo. Since last month's shootings in Paris, travel agents in Israel report a drop of over 30% in plane and hotel reservations for Paris and other French cities and resorts. In the past, France has been the most popular vacation destination for the Israeli public. At the same time, in a speech at a synagogue in New York City, France's chief rabbi, Chaim Korsia, replying to the appeal of the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu that French Jews move to Israel, noted, "The Prime Minister's job is to say that." He added that there has been a Jewish presence in France for 2,000 years, a heritage that French Jews cherish. While acknowledging the real threats of anti-Semitism in France, as well as other parts of Europe, he reminded his audience of the words of the French Prime Minister, that France would not be France without Jews. In Oslo, Norway, 1,000 Muslims formed a symbolic human shield around Oslo's main synagogue in protest against shootings at a Copenhagen synagogue, calling it a ring of peace. A spokesman for the group said, "We shout no to anti-Semitism, no to Islamophobia. We do not want individuals to define what Islam is for the rest of us." In a fitting affirmation of this action, the inscription on the front of the synagogue, taken from the prophet Isaiah, reads, "My house shall be called a house of prayer for all peoples." On a lighter note, in cold and snowy Boston, half a century after the end of the Yiddish theater, there is a new klezmer musical in English and in Yiddish, bringing warmth and humor to a city that certainly can use it. Called The King of Second Avenue, and based upon a novel written over 100 years ago, the musical pokes fun at Jewish interaction among immigrants who came to this country over a century ago from Eastern Europe. The musical's title was selected by the famous American Jewish playwright Robert Brustein, founding director of Harvard's American Repertory Theater. And that's the two Jewish news of Jews around the world.
We are delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Joshua Hatton. He is the co-founder of the Jewish Whiskey Company. And, you know, can you explain what a whiskey jubilee is for our listeners?
Sure. So, you know, we at the Whiskey Jubilee, at Jewish Whiskey Company.
You haven't been sampling any of your wares this morning.
No. It's too late. All the sampling's been done. at the Jewish Whiskey Company, we try to have a sense of humor. Whiskey is supposed to be fun. And, you know, we were asked to start a whiskey event almost 4 years ago in Manhattan. Really, it was an answer to a larger whiskey event who happened to move their annual event to Shabbos. It ended up being Friday night and Saturday night, and it just in Manhattan that doesn't really work for a good number of people who would like to attend a show like that. So we started the Whiskey Jubilee. You can imagine how we spell Jubilee.
Yes, we can.
And that happened on the Thursday before this larger event. This larger event is called Whiskey Fest. And you know, we had about 4.5 weeks, really, to plan this inaugural event. And we ended up getting about almost 40 brands, almost 200 different whiskeys. We got a wonderful Glatt Kosher caterer to come in, and we had almost 250 people come to this event that, you know, again, 4.5 weeks in the planning. So we were sort of forced into doing this festival, and now we completed our third annual one in June. We're getting now close to 400 people attending, many more brands, and now we do a festival bottling that's, you know, it's specific to the Whiskey Jubilee, and we on the label we have this nice sort of modern Orthodox gentleman on the front cover drinking bourbon on the stoop of a brownstone, and we just like to have fun with it.
Tell us a little bit more about we got into this earlier in the show about the possible challenge of making sure that Scotch whiskey is kosher. It has to do with the casks, not the materials that go into creating the Scotch. Explain a little bit about how that works.
Sure. So, you know, this generally tends to be with Scotch whiskey, and also the Japanese use sherry casks as well. The way they make the whiskey is they use malted barley, and they make that. They make a beer out of the barley. They distill that beer, and then they put it into casks. And the Scots, 95% of the time, will use what's called ex-bourbon. In other words, the Americans use the casks one time to create bourbon. They can't use it again because legally, bourbon has to be matured in new charred oak. So they sell these casks or barrels that they can't ever use again to the Scots. And the Scots will use that to mature their whiskey.
I don't want to mention the Scots' reputation for thriftiness, but reusing those casks, of course, makes perfect sense.
Well, it does make perfect sense. And, you know, our VP, my co-founder, is a Scotsman, and we like to talk about how the Jews and Scots joined together to create copper wire by fighting over a penny. You know, we're thrifty people.
Yes.
feel free to cut that out.
Well, it's going to be Purim. It's okay. Let's keep going. So they reused the bourbon cask. 95% of the scotch is produced in these second use bourbon casks, but not always.
So again, it's a thrifty thing to do, but really, it makes for great scotch whiskey. The problem with this practice is bourbon casks must be produced using American oak. American oak does one thing to whiskey while the whiskey is maturing in the cask, but the Scots are looking for other types of flavors. Particularly, they're after different kinds of wood, and more specifically, they're after Spanish oak. Now, American oak is very tight and porous and gives whiskey these delicious sort of vanilla and coconut flavors, where Spanish oak is not as tight it's more porous, and it pulls out these darker, deeper, sweeter flavors, dried fruits, figs, things like that. And unfortunately, the only way that they can really get the Spanish oak is by accessing sherry casks. That's the Spaniards, when they make their sherry, what they have available is Spanish oak. And so, you know, getting back to what the rub is or the concern about why a whiskey matured in a sherry cask may be viewed as not kosher. It gets back to, was the sherry sitting in that cask previously, was that kosher? Chances are, no.
Almost certainly not.
Almost certainly not. There's very few, I think there's one producer that I can't even think of the name, that makes a kosher sherry. So that's where the concern comes into play. But I get back to, and I'm not a rabbi, not a
mashgiach, right?
I'm not a mashgiach. I am not a scholar of the Talmud. But what I will say is two things to this, and this is why we feel whiskey is kosher by nature, regardless of the type of cask that the whiskey is matured in. And this is two things. One, if you measure the content of sherry within a whiskey on any of the store shelves, the content or the amount of sherry in that whiskey can be measured in parts per million. You know, I think there's a Talmudic rule.
Botel v'shishim is the Talmudic phrase is botel v'shishim. If it's less than a 60th part, an unintentional part,
correct,
doesn't count.
So we have parts per million rather than less than a 60th. And then there's the intent, and that's why I preface that with what the producers are trying to accomplish. And they're not looking, when they use a sherry cask, they're not looking to make the whiskey taste like sherry. They're looking for that effect of Spanish oak on the whiskey, just as the Japanese use Japanese oak. It adds a different flavor, a different element. The Scots will also use French oak, which adds this sort of lovely spicy character to the whiskey. So the intent isn't to make it taste like sherry, and the content of sherry within the whiskey is less than a 60th. It's in parts per million. So our company rule is, when we bottle a whiskey, we will always ensure that 50% of our line is whiskeys matured in ex-bourbon barrels, or maybe it's American whiskeys. We've bottled American whiskeys. But the other 50%, we don't hold back. If we find a very interesting whiskey matured in a sherry cask or some sort of a wine cask, we won't hold back, but we let people know, full detailed cask provenance. We want our customers to make the decision that they're most comfortable with.
Now, Scotch has a reputation for being sort of the premier sipping whiskey in the world. What led you to like Scotch best?
You know, for years and years, I couldn't stand Scotch.
That is ironic.
I think we all have that that story of having too much of it one time at a younger age, and you sort of get turned off to it. But it just so happened that maybe 8 years ago or so, at my shul, we had a congregant who loved to bring in various whiskeys. And for whatever reason, I let my guard down and I said, you know what, I'll give this whiskey stuff another try. And there was a bottle of Lagavulin 16-year-old, which is this smoky whiskey. And I don't think I ever tasted anything like that before. And it was, the interesting thing about it was, it reminded me of going camping with my father. And, you know, my father would bring my sister and I up to Bear Mountain in upstate New York. It just reminded me of that. And it brought back this wonderful memory. And I said, you know, there's something more to this than just high alcohol booze. There's something fun in here. And that was sort of my gateway.
You report on your website that something like 40% of your readers and the members of the Jewish Whiskey Company that subscribe are not Jewish.
Yeah, I would say that those numbers may be a little old. I'm going to venture a guess and say that it's about a 50-50 split of Jewish to non-Jewish. And another interesting demographic is that about 35% of our members who purchase our whiskey are female. And women who love smoky whiskey. So it's been really interesting to see, as we gain more and more members, how our demographics sort of shift around. But yeah, it's about a 50-50 split of Jewish to non-Jewish.
And really what unites them is enjoying a really high-quality Scotch whiskey. So what do you recommend as the best Scotch to drink with Hommentoschen?
Well, what filling are we going with? That's going to make it all, right?
All right. Let's see. I'm going to challenge you a little bit. So let's start with apricot Hommentoschen.
Ooh, okay. So for an apricot Hommentoschen, given that sweetness, that stone fruit sweetness, I would go with a peated whiskey, a smoky whiskey, to help balance that out. You wouldn't want a sweet whiskey to go with that overly sweet apricot filled Hommentoschen.
Okay, so you're going with a little smokier, a little peatier Scotch. All right, so I'm going to move to a different challenge. My wife has been making rhubarb Hommentoschen. Really fantastic, homemade. That's with a regular white dough. She also makes them with a chocolate dough, but let's just take it with the regular cookie dough. What's the ideal Scotch with a rhubarb Hommentoschen?
So with a rhubarb Hommentoschen, let me preface why I'm going to say a peated one. The poppy seed one, if you were to say poppy seed, for whatever reason, I would go with a sweeter, non-peated whiskey. But for rhubarb has that sweet tartness to it. And because of that, I would go with a peated one again this time. But maybe a peated one that, like the Lagavulin 16, which has that sort of Spanish oak matured component to it, it's got sort of a heavier sweetness to it to maybe offset that
tartness of
rhubarb quality.
But for poppy seed, we're going with a sweet whiskey then.
Easily. Glenn Murray would come to mind.
I want to thank Joshua Hatton for a great visit here on Too Jewish. You can go to singlecasknation.com to find out more about the Jewish Whiskey Company. And I want to wish you also a Chag Purim Sameach, a happy Purim, and L'chaim.
Chag Purim Sameach. Thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 a.m. Our guest will be Gerard Ederi, the talented singer, multi-instrumentalist, and educator, discussing the music of the Sephardim, the Jews of Spain, Portugal, and the many countries they dispersed to throughout the Mediterranean basin, Europe, the Middle East, and the world. Our playout this morning on Too Jewish comes from our pre-Purim musical preview. It's the classic Purim tune, Chag Purim, in a jazzy version by Mark Bloom. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a Chag Purim Sameach, a happy holiday of Purim this coming Thursday and Friday, and of course the extravaganzas and carnivals next Sunday, and have a week, we pray, of peace.
Chag Purim, Chag Supreme, where grown-ups and kids all act like Yeladim. Exciting Ad Lo Yada, reciting Al HaNissim. It's a funky, funky holiday, this Chag Purim. As long as I remember those winters of my youth, 2 months past December and those carnival booths, I'd strut around dressed up like Mordecai, I recall, and check out all the cute Queen Esters like it was a fancy guy.